Oh, snap. Welcome back. Another show, another week, another episode of the Tall Tales with Taylor Jones podcast. Thank you very much for joining me. Thank you for pushing the subscribe button and the download button and the let's listen to this podcast button. I appreciate it. My goal here is just to be in your queue of 10 favorite podcasts that you have or whatever. My face can sit up there just as good as anybody else's, I guess. So if you want this podcast to come directly to your device every single week for free, hit that subscribe button and you'll see my my little half-smiling Mona Lisa face waiting for you there every single week, hopefully with a fresh episode. Sometimes I miss one, guys. Sometimes I miss them, but that's not often. We stretch them out. We try to get no more than 10 days apart, but we try to feed at least one every 10 days. And I think this is episode number 35 or 36 since last September. So I'll take those numbers, folks. That's a good. That's good enough for an old boy from Woodbine, I tell you. We'll go with that. So today I'm excited to be back at it here with my good buddy who I'll introduce in a minute. We were just discussing off camera the phenomenon of Pokemon Go. Pokemon Go, are you kidding me? Am I in the fifth grade again? This stuff was dumb 16 years ago, and it's dumb now. But still people are doing it, so maybe I'm the dumb one. Maybe that's it. Of course, then the next guy said, well, Taylor, wrestling's pretty dumb, and you do that. I'm like, well, you're right. Yeah, but I like wrestling. And if you like Pokemon Go, no judgment. No judgment from over here at our house.
There's a little bit of judgment.
There's a little bit touch of judgment in there. But only for the ones at 1 a.m. at Centennial Park. You guys, and you know who you are. I don't know what you're doing at 1 a.m. at Centennial Park, but you're there.
It's just sketchy. I feel like you're going to get robbed at 1 a.m. once you're walking around glued to your phone.
Yeah, somebody's going to pop out of the McDonald's over there and just out of that little train or whatever.
I will say this. It's getting people outside and moving their feet. So
there you go.
That's a perk.
My favorite story was the guy who caused the wreck in Massachusetts on the highway. And said, hey, man, you got to risk shit to get shit. He told him.
Heard that. Let's make a shirt out of that.
Yeah, dude. Hey, man, t-shirt sales make the world go round.
Sure do.
Yeah, they do. So, all right, we're in the old loony bin here. My good buddy, Mr. Ben Hutto, is on the line with us today.
Howdy.
Live and in person. I've been hitting this guy up to do the podcast for like about a 6 months or so now, and we finally got on the same page enough to do it. And I'm super excited to have him here because he's going to offer us the perspective of an insider. Uh-oh.
Oh, man.
The inside minds as to how this whole crazy business works. Ben's a manager, an artist manager, and I believe you're the first artist manager that I've spoken with, or the first insider at all that I've spoken with. I've mostly spoken with artists and musicians and the like, but I believe you are the first one who's actually helped some of those artists get to where they're going, and I'm excited. I know I'm going to learn something. See, every week on the podcast, the idea is to ask enough questions to where we actually learn something, and that's what we're going to do today, because I literally, the thought of somebody else's livelihood and things of that nature being in my hands is pretty frightening. I couldn't imagine.
It's all frightening, man.
Is it?
They're just everything. Life.
Life is frightening. So how do you deal with the frightening parts of life, man? What's your go-to a frightening pacifier there?
Oh, I just put on my favorite playlist and listen to music.
And just roll?
Just roll with it.
See, that's a real...
Get in a good headspace and start trucking through it.
Start heading forward, man. See, that's a real music fan right there, man, when it brings you your shalom and your peace.
Oh, the shalom.
The shalom, bro.
Yeah, you got to close the Pokemon Go app and then open the email and start checking. I'm just kidding. I haven't downloaded Pokemon Go.
Okay, me neither. I don't even know.
Many of my friends have.
Yeah.
And I judge all of them.
Mm-hmm.
But, hey, to each his own.
Hey, to each his own. There's probably one right outside the door here, and we don't
Charizard
even know.
Charizard or
Yeah.
I didn't even play the game. I know like three characters.
No, I didn't play it either.
Squidward. No, that's SpongeBob.
Squidward. The old hologramic Squidward or whatever they call it.
Yeah.
That's hilarious, dude. So, man, let's just talk about you for a little while. Where are you from, brother? Where are you born and raised at?
Born in Macon, Georgia.
That's a good place to be born.
Yeah, and then lived there for a few years. Moved over to Selma, Alabama.
Really?
Try to not remember that area.
I did not know that about you.
Lived in Selma for a little bit of 7 years or so. Moved there for my dad's work. He was the human resource officer at a place called American Candy, which was the factory that made all of those, you know, those like giant swirly suckers that
absolutely
you see at like Disney World. And oh, and then they made the wax Coke bottles, you know, the wax lips and stuff.
Okay.
So he worked at that plant for what would be 7 years or so. So I was, I guess that'd be about 93 to 2000 was when I lived in Selma. And then we moved to Tallahassee, and I was Tallahassee, Florida. And I lived there from 2000 until 2010.
Mm.
Moved up here, went to school. But when I was in Florida, you know, mom, dad lived there, still live there. I had to get out, man. It was
Couldn't deal with it.
But I ended up, I was planning on going to school for nursing, which is nuts when I think about it now. Because my mom's a nurse, and I figured if she can do it, I can do it. Well, that's not the case. Nurses, or anybody in the healthcare industry, is put on this earth and blessed with those talents to do that. And I learned pretty quickly. I worked in the emergency room while I was in school, and I learned through that experience that I'm not quite cut out for that job.
Neither am I, bro. Dude, you should ask my brother the next time you're around him about his emergency room freak out last time we went to visit somebody.
Oh man, I definitely will. But so I ended up having the job at the hospital, realized through a different series of events that I don't want to do that. So then I had to figure out kind of what the plan was, what I wanted to do, what I was interested in. And I'd always been interested in music. You know, I kind of grew up singing in church and stuff. So I enjoyed the performing aspect, but outside of that, I always loved live shows. I loved going to concerts, listening to live concerts. You know, I loved CDs, and I was blessed to have, I have a family member, an uncle of mine. It's my mom's brother, who has been, he's an industry vet. He's been in the music business since since longer than I've been alive. But having him be in the family, and I remember just going, you know, always looking up to him and his job and be like, holy cow, that's awesome. He's able to go to these concerts. He's able to, you know, do all this cool stuff. You know, how do I do that? And through thinking about it, I was like, man, I think I want to try to do the music business. But I had no clue what that meant. You know, the closest thing I knew to that was just, you know, I knew the term manager, you know, because that's just kind of a general term. You know, I knew the term booking agent. Didn't really know what that was at the time, and I ended up calling. I remember calling my uncle, and I remember saying, "Hey, you know, I think I want to move to Nashville and do this thing called the music business." And go to school for it and stuff like that. And I remember him telling me that that's a terrible idea. I was like, that wasn't how I thought that conversation was going to go.
That didn't go as encouraging as we thought.
No, I thought I was going to be like, oh, heck yeah, man. That's an awesome
idea. Yeah, I'll hook
idea.
You up.
Like, I'll see you when you get up here kind of thing. But he was like, nah, that's not a good idea. But I, you know, kind of, this is kind of my mentality anyway, is, you know, when my head gets stuck on something, I, you know, I do it.
Mm.
So I wanted to do it. I moved up here and ended up getting accepted into Belmont University's College of Music Business. But my original major was audio engineering. I was like, oh, heck yeah. Because whenever I go to live shows, I'd be like, man, how cool are those dudes down there in front of that really colorful board that's making the whole thing run, you know? And I didn't really know what went into that, but I always knew, like, man, that's awesome. The sound guys, like, that's cool. Which they are, man. They make your band sound good. Like, a great show doesn't happen without a great engineer. But I learned quickly that audio was not my forte. One, I don't have a ponytail. Two, I don't wear combat boots all the time or all black, you know. But no, I'm just kidding. Not all.
I got you. And you don't smoke cigarettes.
Oh, that's fun. I'm just kidding. I know a ton of my front of house friends actually look like they're J. Crew models. So it works out. But so I came up here and I was actually a audio engineering major, and I was going to do classical voice as a minor because that's not normal. So I, you know, auditioned for the School of Music, did that whole thing, got accepted, and then ended up, I remember meeting with the counselor, whoever's like, this is what you need to do. And she said, hey, so here's all the classes you're required to take. And here are a bunch of 0-credit-hour classes that you're also required to take. I was like, wait, I have to take classes that don't count? And she's like, yeah, well, they're, you know, she had some description for them, but I was like, no, thank you.
0-credit-hour classes.
It's an expensive school. I ain't gonna waste my time there, man.
No, bruh.
So I ended up changing my major to music business, and you know, didn't really know what I wanted to do. I knew I didn't want to do audio engineering, but I figured my next best step was to intern, get internships, go from there. So I started interning as many places as I could. My first internship was at CAA, that's, if for those of you who don't know CAA, they're a booking agency, and there's a handful of big booking agencies, but I'd say CAA and William Morris are, you know, the top two. And a booking agency, you know, is those folks when you're talking music. Now there's, these agencies have everyone from, you know, musicians to actors to authors to TV, you know, personalities to news anchors. But when we're talking strictly music, the booking agency is, their job is to book shows. You know, that's their sole job. So I interned at a booking agency here in town, CAA, and I think at the time there was a staff of like 85 or so. They've grown since then, but they, you know, book a ton of artists here in town. But I quickly through that realized that, man, you know, the live show aspect of the music industry can't run without the booking agent, but I don't want to be one. So it was great to learn kind of the ins and outs and the kind of the vibe of what a booking agency is like. But I realized pretty quickly that, you know, I don't want to do that. So I interned there, finished that up. You know, I made sure that the majority of the people there, by the time I left, you know, knew who I was. That was kind of a goal of mine was to always make sure that, you know, wherever I interned, that I kind of stood out from the bunch. So a lot of that was done by, like, taking people to lunch, you know, asking different agents, like, hey, can I take you to lunch?
Ah, that kind of thing. And, I see.
Because that's the thing is, like, once you get out in it, a lot of these guys that I took to lunch as an intern, like, we're friends now. And I see them regularly at shows, or we'll go get dinner. And, you know, it's great. It goes from there. But, you know, I realized, again, that I didn't want to do booking. So my next step after that was I interned at a promotions company called Outback Concerts. And they put on a ton of different shows in Nashville, but also around the country. They do everything from your music concerts to comedy shows. They also, you know, host the Southern Ground Food and Music Festival that's put on by Zach Brown. And so I interned there, got an idea of what kind of goes into putting on a show. So the opposite side of booking, you know, for those who aren't super familiar with the process, the promoter is usually, you know, the booking agent and the promoter are who talk the most together, because they're the ones that are actually making the show the reality. But I realized I didn't want to do that. And right around that time, while at Belmont, was hanging out with Mr. Nate Zirker, who you've had on this podcast before, and love Nate Zirker, one of my favorite people on the planet. And Nate was like, hey, man, I'm kind of doing this, like, acoustic, folky band thing, and I got a couple questions for you. And I, you know, at the time was like, yeah, heck yeah. Like, I'll answer them. I don't know if they're right, but my answers are right just because I knew nothing at that time. And, but, you know, they were recording. Nate was recording with a few other folks. At the time, it didn't have a quote unquote band name, but I want to say probably a couple weeks after we started talking, they chose the name Judah and the Lion. But they were recording their first EP, First Fruits. And I remember going into the studio and meeting all those folks for the first time. And they started bouncing questions off of me. And I would tell them what I think was right. And somehow it all, majority of the stuff was right. And we ended up, you know, fast forward 4.5 years, and I'm still managing those guys, and we're having fun. They're touring the country and touring the world, and they're making a living off of this crazy idea of music, which is a blessing. And yeah, I mean, it's awesome. So that's I guess where I kind of started it. I didn't really think I was going to be a manager. That wasn't my goal coming up here. But I kind of fell into it, and some mentors of mine that I've been very blessed to have were very encouraging to me, saying, hey, you need to stick with it. You know, you've got some great qualities. So I took their advice and continued to do that. I ended up getting an internship at a management company. Interned there, and, you know, really wanted to dive into what that meant, what management meant. And, you know, fast forward three and a half, 4 years, I'm working with a company, and, you know, total, we've got 5 management clients and probably 15 or so marketing clients and a ton of label servicing clients as well. So it's, you know, we're having a good time.
Wow. So tell me about, I wanted to come full circle with, was it your uncle that told you, nah, I don't really know about this. So yeah. What, is he a manager?
Yeah, so he's a manager. He's currently a manager. He's kind of a jack of all trades, and it's nuts. I didn't realize until I got up here and how much I, you know, when I got up here and got into the business and started making connections and two and two added up, and you know, we made the connection that my uncle, his name's Don Van Cleve, I didn't realize how well respected he, like, I knew he was well respected, but I didn't realize the scope of how well respected he was in the industry and how well known. So it's definitely been really cool. But he started off back when I was growing up. You know, I remember I would go out, stay at their house. They lived in Birmingham, Alabama for like 20 something years. And from the age of like 11 to like 16, I'd go to their house during the summer for like 2 weeks. And they, back in like the early, all of the 90s and the early 2000s, they ran this record store down there called Magic Platter. And he opened that, gosh, I guess it was early 90s, right when CDs were getting popular. He opened up, you know, at the time it was a rarity, but a compact disc store, a CD store. And he would do stuff similar to what Grimey's does here in town. He'd do, you know, album release shows where bands would come in and perform, you know, for just the CD store. And it's, I remember, some juggernauts of artists have played there back in the early 90s, like Dave Matthews Band played in Matchbox 20, and some of those caliber artists played, but this was back when they were just getting started. You know, Dave was playing college shows at the time. But he ended up, I'll try to make this as short as possible. He worked and owned these record stores, and as the years went on, and as CDs got more popular, you know, your big chain stores became kind of the bullies in the industry, where, you know, an artist could have their label or whoever's doing their distribution could talk to one person at that company. You know, so let's say it was like a Best Buy or, you know, an FYE or whatever, the Sam Goodies, those type of stores. And they could do, you know, figure out some national rollout plan by talking to one person. But when you got these independent record stores that are across the country, and there's hundreds of them, it's you don't talk to one person. You got to call each one if you want to roll out some type of plan. So they realized that they were having some independent record store conference out on the West Coast, and they realized that. So he went on to form this thing called Coalition of Independent Music Stores, which was SIMS. So him and I think four or five other people kind of realized that, hey, we got an issue here. You know, we need to make essentially a no-name brand, like no-name chain brand. So they formed the SIMS, which, you know, had anywhere from 80 to 100 plus stores that were in this that they could call SIMS, and a label could call SIMS and could roll out, you know, a nationwide plan. So that was a really cool thing that hadn't been done before that he helped do, and helped started Record Store Day. Him and like three or four other people founded and started Record Store
Day. Wow, man, didn't know that.
Yeah. And that's taken off and revitalized the record, you know, the vinyl industry, making vinyl turnaround times a pain in the butt, which is great. But it's whenever, you know, if you want vinyl nowadays, yeah, like if you're going to order a stateside plant, it takes like 5 months.
Yeah. We've been down that road.
It's insane. But, so he did SIMS. He ended up closing down the CD store probably early 2000s. And, ended up working for SIMS full time. And what he would do through SIMS is he would create exclusive content for his record stores that were under his umbrella that like your bigger chains didn't have. So he would set up like Weezer live in Japan or live, you know, wherever, you know, whoever live at this exclusive place, and only his 80 stores would have that. Which is a pretty cool exclusive thing. But through all of those relationships, he started becoming, you know, kind of dialing into the artist land, and he eventually morphed from SIMS into an artist manager and worked at the artist organization, which was one of the companies I interned for. And he ended up managing, I mean, I guess under his kind of world in that company was Soundgarden, Chris Cornell, John Legend was on their roster, Counting Crows, John Mark McMillan. Not John Mark McMillan. James Vincent Memorial. I forgot. So it's three-part names. They get mixed up.
Yeah, bro.
And then I'm trying to think. Oh, Portugal the Man. You know, a few other pretty hot acts at the time. You know, back in probably 2007, 2006, he also started working with a band called Moon Taxi.
Oh, boy.
Which, you know, I know you know those fellas pretty well. But back when they were Belmont students and they ended up graduating, and he kind of was managing those guys as a side gig. And continued to grow and grow and grow. He no longer works for the artist organization. That company actually kind of dissolved. But he continues to manage Moon Taxi, and then he works as a consultant for a company called the Maiden Network, which they deal with YouTube and a ton of YouTube channels and stuff. So, you know, it's been great to have him as a mentor. I feel like once I finally got here and was kind of like, hey, I'm here and I'm serious, you know, I'm here to do it. It became more of a, you know, we're still family, but he became more of a mentor to me than, you know, the crazy uncle. So it's been great. It's been really cool.
So does he, I imagine now that he's seen some of your acts and seeing how those are growing, that he's kind of like, oh, okay.
Well, yeah, it's funny. we had this conversation probably a couple weeks ago, but you know, it's funny. We're getting invited to the same events now, so I like that. It's pretty funny on my part as being the young nephew is getting invited to the same stuff as the veteran uncle, but no, it's really cool, man. And he's still, I mean, I owe a lot of my knowledge and, you know, a lot of my, the things that I've learned are from him, or, you know, people that he's introduced me to and that kind of thing. So yeah, definitely fortunate to have him a part of the equation.
Well, cool, man. Well, that's awesome. I mean, I think sometimes people in the business will say that to see if you're serious.
Yeah.
Like, they'll test you and be like, no, you shouldn't do this. And if you just lay down over right there, then it's like, well, you for sure wouldn't build for this.
I mean, because the thing is, like, people don't realize, like, I guess from the outsider perspective, and this is both on for the artist side and the business side, like, from kind of the quote-unquote audience perspective, it's cool. Like, and don't get me wrong, it is a cool job. Like, I enjoy it, but you know, it's not all glamour. It's not a ton of, you know, it's not all just bright lights and adrenaline rushes. There's a lot of late night calls. There's a lot of emails. There's a lot of just tedious stuff that has to happen. So, I mean, I think him saying that is truthful and saying like, hey, this job isn't what you think it is, but it's still fun, but you got to, you know, it's a lot of hard work. And me being in it for the past 3-4 years, I mean, it is tough work.
So what's like one good solid piece of advice that you can remember him giving you that kind of helped shape sort of your approach or helped you sort of come to some sort of a conclusion of like, this is what I kind of should do in this situation?
Man, one good piece of advice. See, I can't remember if this was Don saying this or if this was another one of my mentors. It might have been my current boss right now, Paul Steele. But it was like, there's no real need. There's a lot of snakes in this industry. And sure, in the short run, those folks might make more money right off the bat or something like that just by doing shady stuff. But if you're like, if you're a good person and you treat people well and you, you know, you're well respected as just a stand up guy or girl, you're going to sleep a lot better at night. And you're going to have longer lasting relationships in this business. Cause it's frightening how small of a town this music business is. Like, if you mess up, if you do something stupid, like idiotic, it'll spread quick, you know? And, you know, if it was an honest mistake, that's one thing. But if it's like something shady, then it'll affect a lot of relationships. So like, as long as you keep your head on straight and you're not an idiot and you're honest, and you know, my thing is like, be straight up. You know, I'm not going to beat around the bush. If I like something, I'm going to tell you I like it. If I don't, I'll tell you I don't. But you know, there's no need to be shady.
I got you. So I couldn't agree more, by the way. Like, at the end of the day, sometimes it means skills versus is the person trustworthy? Like, yeah. that is really going to, you know, sometimes that'll really make a difference is of whether somebody gets the job or not is like, are they that stand up person that you're talking about? Or are they somebody that like could be categorized as maybe really talented, but not dependable or whatever, anything like that?
Yeah. Cause there's a lot of different facets in this job that, you know, you got to trust if you're going to bring somebody onto your team or, you know, be a part of a project that you're doing, you got to trust that they're going to be able to do their job. And the way that you trust them is through recommendations, you know, through word of mouth or other folks that have worked with them before. And that comes directly into play. If you are a stand-up person and work hard, people are going to tell other people that. But if you're shady and do dumb stuff, then they're going to tell them that too. And if someone tells me, you know, hey, this person's great, but they've done some shady stuff, then move along. Let's find somebody else. So
I want to get into a little bit of sort of the difference in the artist and the manager.
Sure.
So like, okay, so a band starts up and they start recording and they have, you know, dreams in their eyes and they're just honestly having so much fun right now. They don't even really think too terribly much about the future. We're just having fun right now and want to document it and all that stuff. And at some point, though, it grows and it gets to the point where we go, oh, wow, like this is actually a business. Even if we're making $200 a night, it's still a business and I got to kind of figure out how to do this. And a lot of times, you know, the musicians are maybe not the most qualified people to be doing that. Sometimes they are, like Bruno is, whatever, he can do that. But like, anyway, what I want to know, ask you is what is sort of, when we'll use Jude and the Lion as an example, but like, what's your job description with and for them at this point? And what do you see kind of their job description is from your perspective?
Well, when you look at a band as a company, which the majority of all proper bands are, they have some type of LLC set up or whatever it may be. I would view the band members, the owners of the band, as exactly that, the owners of a company or the board of directors of a company or whatever you want to call it. And what they do is they'll bring in key people to help run their company. So they'll bring in like a CFO, chief financial officer, which is like a business manager. That's who takes care of all of your finances, everything from payroll to taxes to paying invoices to sending invoices to, you know, folks. You know, and then I guess the manager role would kind of be viewed as like the CEO of the company. They're kind of the the spear point that people can talk to first and then funnel down to all the appropriate parties. But I mean, management's kind of a catch-all. It's funny when people ask, like, what's kind of a normal day like in the world of a manager? And it's really depends on what time of the year it is, what day it is. It's anything from ordering merch when tour merch is low to booking, you know, helping the booking agent book shows and helping plan a route or route of tour, to meeting with the different band members, because they, you know, it's that's a true relationship that you have with your clients, is that it's really you're working so closely with them, so you do life with them. But I mean, there's so much to do on the management side. So, you know, on top of that, it's also kind of the manager's responsibility to make sure that all the other team members on board are doing their jobs. So you have, depending on how big your band is, you know, you can have a team from 5 people all the way up to 100. You know, it just depends. Like if you're dealing with a label, you've got, you know, a ton more folks there. But, you know, your basic band is going to have their business manager, they're going to have their booking agent, a publicist, you know, maybe a sync team. And each of those people have staff under them, which are also touching the project. So kind of a manager's job as well is to make sure that each one of those people are staying well informed with the company, with the band, and what's coming up, and making sure that, you know, we're paying those people, making sure they're doing their jobs. So management, man, it's a catch-all. I mean, I've caught myself, you know, driving merch to a show because we were running out of t-shirts and, you know, we had some at the office. I'm driving down to Birmingham or whatever it may be, you know, to having, you know, having long conversations with folks on the West Coast, like late at night. I mean, it's all over the place. It's a hard thing to give you a description in like 2 sentences.
Hey man, well, luckily for us, we got more time than money, so we can just go on and on.
That's true.
That's a real thing. So let me ask you this then. So you have a band that you've been with since like legit, like infancy,
mm-hmm.
that's now, you know, really starting to have some success. What does that feel like to you to, you know that you're a part of that? Like, because I think it's such a tough thing to do, to get over that hump of like, I call it the 300, but like to where you can draw over 300 people a night. Like that is a massive... There's a lot of bands in America that can draw less than 300 people a night.
Yeah, yeah.
But very few that can draw over 300 a night. So whatever that tipping point, whether those numbers be good or not, when a band gets over that point and they're starting to really buzz and do some good things and play some cool shows and open and all that for good artists and all that, like, what's that like to you when you know that, you know, we're obviously not where we want to go, but we're also not where we were.
Yeah, I mean, I think every band and every manager, whoever's in this industry, always wanting and striving for more. Not in like a greed perspective, but in just like, hey, I'm so passionate about this project and the people in it. I want them to be as big as they can be. And that's kind of always been my mentality from the beginning. And the crazy thing, like, and it's funny that I remember this, but one of Judah and the Lions' first shows was a Cause a Scene show with Larry Klaus, who I know you're super familiar with, and so is Bruno. But I remember, it was funny, the PA system on our first show, which was a little house show to like 100 people, was
I want to say I was there, but I can't confirm.
You probably were.
Was that at Larry's house?
No, that was the second one.
Okay, I was at that one.
Was a It was a pop-up show at like a Red Earth.
Okay.
Something over in Hillsborough Village. But Bruno, we used his PA system or yours. I don't know whose it was, but.
It belonged to the commune.
Yeah. The the Jones compound. But the crazy thing, and it's easy, it's super easy to get caught up in just the nonstop hard work of it all. You know what I'm saying? Like the constant emails and phone calls and stuff, that it does take special moments to now to kind of remind you like, man, this is amazing. Like, this is so cool. It happens more often than not. But, the cool thing is going from literally 3 years ago, you know, we played that Cause a Scene show, 100 people at this pop-up shop with Larry. And fast forward 3 years, you know, this past February, we sold out the War Memorial here in town, which was, you know, a little under 2,100 tickets. So it's like that moment, like that kind of thing is pretty nuts. Like that's when you're like, holy cow, this is for this to happen in 3 years, to go from 200 people at a house show to 2,000 people, you know, paying real money, real tickets to come see you play, is a pretty special thing. And that's happened in a ton of different cities across the country for these guys. And it's super exciting to see. And, you know, I think there's a lot of stuff coming up that's going to be exciting to watch and see what happens.
Absolutely, man. And it's been fun to watch the rise, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
It's from the sidelines at least. So what's it like? I know you manage at least three different artists. So, and each one I would assume is a really different approach just because they're different people.
Yeah.
So how do you balance out like sort of digging in and figuring out what makes each person tick?
Well, the good thing is that one, I work for a great company. It's called Good Time Inc. And it's headed up by a guy named Paul Steele. And Paul's who offered me my job December 2013. So, you know, 2.5 years ago, coming up on 3 years, right out of school, he was like, hey, why don't you come work for me? I was like, that's a great idea. I'm about to graduate. So, the good thing is that I've got a great team around me. I've got, you know, Paul, who is the head of the company, but Paul also, is very involved in all five management clients, and very involved in the three clients that I work with. And then we've got a marketing guy, we have a label servicing girl. I'm fortunate enough to have hired an assistant earlier this year, and then the GM of the company, Sam Steele, that's Paul's wife. She manages Ellie Holcomb and co-manages Drew Holcomb with Paul. So right off the bat, I'm blessed to have a great company and a great team behind me. But yeah, I mean, finding what the different artists tick different ways. I mean, everyone has different, I mean, not only artists, but when you look at your friends, I mean, look at anybody in life, everyone's different. Everyone communicates different. Everyone has different quirks to them. So yeah, I mean, every artist you're ever going to work with is going to be different. But the funny thing is that you'll end up seeing, if you're doing it long enough, you'll end up seeing similar traits in different artists.
Cool, man. Well, that's awesome, man. I'm thankful that you came by the house today and broke this stuff down for me, man.
Yeah, man. It's nuts to me that one, regardless if you're on the business side or the music side, but you're able to make money off of what started as a hobby.
Yeah.
You know,
it's crazy.
It's a blessing. I mean, it's a blessing that people are able to do it. And we're in a fun town that's blowing up. Everyone's moving here. There's music every night. So, yeah, I mean, yeah, it's a blast. It's a blast to be here and to, you know, have a great community of people around you. And, yeah, it's fun.
Man, I couldn't agree more, dude. It's like do something in life that you did for fun when nobody was paying you and nobody was looking or listening or whatever. And it's like, okay, let's run with that.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, man, I enjoy it.
Well, enjoy you do it. A great job, brother.
Thank you.
You've got, you know, three artists that seem to be, you know, really, really happy and thriving in what they do. And that, as somebody who's lived on the artist side more, that's all that we could ever ask for. And a lot more. So, on behalf of them guys, man, I'll just say thank you very much and keep doing what you're doing and keep taking over the world. One of these days I'm going to come ask you for a job or something.
Man, we're just blessed to have a job. So
I couldn't agree more. What's next for you, dude?
Man, that's a great question. We've got a busy fall coming up for everybody. Specifically talking a week from now, I'm excited. I'm going down to Birmingham, Alabama this weekend for, I think called Sloss Fest, which is a festival at the Sloss Furnaces. And I've got some friends that are putting that festival on. And I went there last year, had a blast. So I'm going to go down and check that out again this year. But, we got a ton of stuff going on. We got tours. I mean, everyone's touring this fall. We got Christmas records. We got Christmas tours. It's all kinds of stuff. And we also, so the company I work for, we put on this festival every year called Moon River Music Festival.
Yeah, I know about that.
And it was started by Drew Holcomb. This will be the third year. And we got a pretty fun lineup this year. We got, gosh, the Oh Hellos, Johnny Swim, David Ramirez, a handful. I think there's probably 13, 14 different artists that are playing. But we put that on in October. It's put on by the company I work for. So we're all super involved in that. So getting ready for that. And then we also do a monthly, comes out of our office as well, but there's a thing called, Magnolia Record Club. And what that is a monthly record subscription service where you can pay $25 a month. And in return, you get a new vinyl record delivered to your door every month that's curated by Drew Holcomb. Every month comes with the vinyl, and then it has a custom-made postcard. Every month has different art on it, but it has a write-up from Drew kind of saying why he picked this record and what's his connection to it, what's his love for it. But man, it's been such a cool, I'm a member of it. I mean, I pay my $25 a month and get a record every month, and it's fun, man. I mean, there's some great records on it too. We've had everyone from Drew, you know, Drew started it off with his record Medicine, but then we had Colony House and Chris Stapleton and Lumineers, just to name a few. This month is actually the Oh Hellos, and it comes with like a custom colored vinyl, and you know, it's a ton of fun. So if you want to are interested in that, go search Magnolia Record Club.
Dude, that sounds great. Like I love that.
Yeah, I mean it's vinyl until you get into it. Like you don't really get it, I guess. But when you have a semi nice, it doesn't have to be like super nice. But if you have a pretty decent record player and some speakers,
you're good, bro.
You put a vinyl record on it.
It's the stuff, man. And you can't like skip songs on it, which I like. Like, skipping songs, especially if we're like in the car and I'm like subject to somebody else skipping songs all the time.
Yeah.
Oh, that bothers me. Especially if you skip it in the middle of
song. Dude, I've got music ADD, man. If I'm if I'm in the car and we're on Spotify or something, I'm always like, okay, it's even bad enough to where I'll be like, won't even be finished with a song yet. Like, oh, I got to show you this song. And I'll just turn it off of it.
See, I can't do it. Can't do it.
But with vinyls, you can't.
You don't
skip.
Got no choice.
You can't. Skip.
That's what I love about it. You are forced to see, like, when a person puts out a record, like, that whole model was built on vinyl records where it's two sides and you listen to both sides.
Yeah.
And until I got into vinyl records, I didn't really understand what making an album actually was. But now it's like, oh, this is what you're making. You're making either two sides or four sides of music to put out for, you know, the people to listen to, and they're going to listen to it straight because that is, you know, how you're presenting the art or whatever. But not to not, like I said, I'm poking fun because, you know, I like to make fun of my wife for doing that, for skipping songs. But, like, you know, it's just an alternative way of taking it in.
Yeah.
You know, and taking it in contextually. And, like, so what if you don't love that song as much as the previous song? Like, it's a part of the whole picture. It's like if somebody had a painting and, like, oh, I love that, you know, sunset. I just really don't like that tree on there. And it's like, well, come on now. That's part of the freaking
it's
thing.
It's all part of it.
Yeah.
No, I mean, just, man, there's nothing better than getting home after a long day and, you know, putting on a record, you know, turning, you know, kind of turning the lights down a little bit, maybe whatever your preference is here. But mine would be to, you know, pour me a little glass of whiskey or bourbon, like a Blanton's or something like that, and just calm
exactly.
down and chill, and, you know,
need my calm me down.
Yeah, kind of let your brain start unwinding, because it's when you're working all day and you're so busy and pulled in different directions, your brain gets just tightened up, and, you know, it takes a minute for it to unwind at the end of the night, and that helps me do it. So it's cool, because it's funny, you can't, with vinyl, you can't just, you know, download it off iTunes like you can with other stuff. You know, you have to actually be intentional and go to a record store. Mm-hmm. So it's convenient, at least for me, when I'm, you know, pretty busy, and kind of find it hard to make it out to the stores as much as I want, to have a new vinyl show up in my mailbox every month. So,
man, I love that. I'm gonna see about working that into the old budget.
Check it out, man. It's worth it.
Well, it seems like that, because you can't hardly buy vinyls for $25.
I know. And it comes, and the cool thing is, with your first one, you'll get a pretty cool Magnolia shirt.
Sweet.
Shirt with it.
Well, that sounds great, brother. Man, so, thank you for shining some light on some stuff for me today.
Yeah, I mean, I'll tell you, everything's changing always. The music business is changing. You know, right now the big change is streaming. Streaming's not going away, and it's trying to figure out, you know, more people now are listening to music than they ever have been. You know, people are like, oh gosh, the music industry's turning to crap. It's really not. I mean, there's more music being put out because, one, you can buy an Apple laptop and a USB microphone and make a quote-unquote record.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's so easy nowadays to put something out. But it's nuts that, you know, whenever those folks are uploading all their stuff and streaming it, more people are listening to music now than they ever have, because it's on your phone. Like, it's on your computer, it's on your radio. And, it's just figuring out how to change the system from what it is now, which is kind of that older mentality, that old school record mentality, to, you know, kind of bringing it more into the, you know, 21st century, and figuring out how to maximize on streams, because that's not going anywhere. I mean, it's a pretty wild stage to think. And this cool, man, I'll tell you one crazy thing too, that a friend of mine, he used to be a professor, or he still is a professor at Belmont, but he was one of my professors. But we're good buddies now, and he was telling me about virtual reality. like VR.
Oh my gosh. I had this guy in the Uber car telling me about that.
He was telling me all about it. And I'll tell you, it's frightening to me. One, because I tried it and it's insane how immersive it is. Because you put on, and I'm not, like, you can do the whole, I guess there's like a Google cardboard box thing where you can put your phone in it and, you know, put a pair of, you know, earbuds in. But when you actually get the, like, actual virtual reality headsets, like your Oculus Rifts, and I don't even know all the company names, and then sound-canceling headphones, dude, it feels like you're in it. And I remember the demo that I did was I was in a, you can choose, like, what do you want to do? Do you want to be on top of Mount Everest and literally looking around, you know, or do you want to be at a concert, at a music festival? And I was like, yeah, let's try the concert. Dude, I clicked on that thing and it felt like I was there. It was nuts. Because you can literally, and I tell you, whenever you try, you have to get one of your friends to videotape you doing
in
it
there.
Because you look stupid when you're got your headset on and your headphones on and you're standing there and it's quiet because you can only hear what's out of your headphones and you're turning around and looking up and looking down because it's all controlled by your movement. So if you turn your head left in the VR headset, you're turning left and turning right, and all of a sudden I'm in the middle of a EDM concert at a festival, and there's people jumping around all around me, and I mean it was nuts, man. So it's weird to think, because this technology is just now kind of coming to light, right? So it's weird to think, you know, specifically, and I know streaming isn't this crazy, but think about when SoundCloud just came out and when Spotify just came out. You know, it took a minute for people to kind of buy into it, but now all of a sudden everyone's doing it. Here's my question. You can ponder on this. We can ponder on this. Like, 5 years from now, are you going to sell, like, is it going to be a common thing for touring artists to have VR, portable VR cameras, setups, and microphones, and set them up strategically in the crowd? Is it going to be common for artists to, rather than charge $25, $30 for a ticket, charge $10 and you can log in from home on your couch wearing your virtual reality headset and watch a show live from your couch? Fast forward, man, it's scary to think about it, but I keep thinking about, what's that movie? WALL-E, which is that like Pixar movie where if fast forward and all of a sudden the human race, they're all confined to wheelchairs because no one walks anymore. No one leaves their chair because they're all stuck in VR world and living other lives. It's nuts. But do you think, like, 5 years from now, like, that's going to be a common thing?
I think it absolutely could be, because there's a lot of really, really smart people that are investing in that technology.
Oh, yeah.
And developing it. And this guy I picked up, like, he was what you would call a venture capitalist. And that's exactly what he's working with.
It's nuts.
And he's just, like, putting it over big time with me and telling me, like, dude, it's not really all the way there yet, but we're working on the app now.
It's about to be.
You know, and we live in a world where if you have a good enough idea that can turn into an app on a phone, then you can make a lot of money.
Pokemon Go.
Yeah, like nobody heard of Pokemon Go a month ago.
Dude, no one heard about it a week ago. I'm not kidding. This has just been blowing my mind. And I know we've talked about it multiple times during this, but by the end of this week, it will have more active users than Twitter.
Gosh.
Which is the biggest, you know, arguably the biggest social platform, one of them. More active users on this game. And to top that, this one app, it's just an app, it's free to download, rose Nintendo's stock like $5.something billion dollars with a B.
And it's just an idea.
A free app.
Yeah, just an idea. Somebody's like, hey, let's do this. Use your camera or whatever, do and bang.
Oh, it's just nuts, man.
Well, I tell you, man, that's the kind of world we live in. It's I like to call it the information age. I think there's just more information out there at such an accessible, you know, just look it up, man. What do you want to know?
Yeah, I mean, you got the world in your pocket.
Exactly. And with that is there's enough smart, smart people that are going to come up with something to entertain or to play or to sell or whatever. And it's just going to happen. So, but the thing about music is music ain't ever going anywhere.
Nope.
There's more people listening to music now than ever, which is hopeful.
Music's a language, man. It doesn't matter, you know, if you're talking about an indigenous tribe and, you know, in the rainforests or whatever, like music can transcend language barriers. You know, it connects people. It's nuts. It's one of the only things on the planet that can do that. So it's a pretty cool thing to be a part of that. And, you know, it's fun.
Man, I couldn't agree more. Well, Ben, this has been a pleasure. I'm so glad that we got to do this, and I thank you for your time.
Thank you for having me.
Dude, bro, it's awesome. Again, I'm a fan of your work and of your guys and all that stuff, too. So more power to you guys, man.
Appreciate
Best
it.
Of luck moving forward. All right, folks, this is another week. It's been awesome. We'll post up another episode here about this time next week. I don't know who it'll be on here yet. I got some ideas cooking in the old brain.
Cooking away.
But, man, this thing isn't really playing. We just roll with it.
You know who you need to get on here?
Who?
Mr. Robbie Robinson.
Oh, my gosh. I would do that. I don't think I won't. I will so do that. I love that. That's a great idea. Bro.
For those of you who don't know Robbie, you need to know Robbie.
Oh, I'll help you get to know him. We'll
Goodness
help you.
Gracious.
Yeah, we'll help you. That's the legend. That's the legend that everybody knows about. Who's ever bought a t-shirt?
It's unbelievable. He is the master of t-shirts.
Yeah, he's a t-shirt master and the motivational speaking master. And me and Bruno worked a whole weekend with him one time.
What?
At a camp. Yeah.
Are you serious?
Oh, absolutely.
Is he the same at a camp as he is here?
Just yeah, he's
off
he's
the wall crazy.
He's all in. He's just all in.
I'll tell you, he's the only person I've ever... Like, whenever I text with him, he'll send me words, certain words that are just all caps. But, like, when he's speaking, if he were to speak that sentence to me, those words would be louder than the other words. Like, he truly is painting a picture in my mind of how he would say it.
No, I mean, I love him. That's another guy who, like, you know what I'm saying, followed what he thought was right and friggin' marches to his own drum and has success.
And he's crushing it.
Yeah, dude, he really is.
Literally, every one of our management clients at Good Time uses Robbie for shirts.
Well, then I got to call him. I'll get him on here. Folks, that's a pre-sequel or whatever you call that of something to come. See, this is the ideas that I need, Ben. This is an idea guy I got on the mic here. He's an idea guy. Well, y'all... For Mr. Ben Hutto, I'm Taylor Jones. We appreciate you listening to us talk. We will see y'all next time.